This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
And I'm Orion Samuelson saying good morning, Roger, and good morning to the world from our Huntley, Illinois studios, where my thermometer says 39 degrees at the moment. So fall making its appearance, and we'll be talking more about that and talking about the hurricane that has taken nearly 900 lives in Haiti this morning, the report says, and still churning away up the east coast of the United States. As a matter of fact, my granddaughter Grace is a freshman at the University of Charleston in South Carolina, and they closed that college and sent their students home at midweek. So it'll be interesting to see when they get back and what they'll find when they do. But we're here on this Saturday morning, and it's the final day of World Dairy Expo in Madison. We were there on Wednesday, going back this afternoon for the very special 50th anniversary presentation of the Supreme Dairy Female Champion. That's an annual event. And it'll be a little special this year because it's the golden anniversary, and I'm delighted to be a part of the program tonight that will ring down the curtain on this 50th anniversary of World Dairy Expo. Harvesting, yes, it continues, and we're so far getting pretty good reports on the yields, at least, some concerns about quality. So, we have a lot to talk about, as always, on Saturday morning, and we appreciate your company and look forward to sharing with you some of the interviews that were recorded at World Dairy Expo earlier this week. But, as always, the growing season isn't quite over, and that means Jim Fazell will be joining us when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show.
He's the man who knows all the answers on lawns, trees, vegetables, flowers, and everything else in between. Our man for horticulture, Jim Fazell. Good morning, Jim.
Well, good morning, Orion. I hope that you brought some sunshine when you got back from your tour out west.
Well, I think we brought a little bit, but as I look at what's happening, not as much as we had in Arizona. We had beautiful weather out there, and temperatures are moderating, so it's a more comfortable atmosphere right now.
Good. Well, we've had some sun since you got back, but while you were gone, the shade was pulled down. We had dry weather before you left, and then we had pretty good rains while you were gone. We had 3.5 inches since the first day of fall in our rain gauges. That's quite a bit of rain for this time of year. But there's plenty of stuff to do out in the garden right now. There's stuff to harvest. And time's getting short. You can tell because the days are getting shorter and it's getting a little bit cooler. Anyway, we need to get out and get to it before the weather deteriorates too much. Most of us are just about done with gardening. You know, things have progressed and we lose track of time. And it's October. In fact, it's almost a third of October gone already. But we should still be picking some stuff like some of the root crops, beets and carrots, broccoli, certainly. Tomatoes and peppers are probably on their last legs, but squash. And there are some herbs that are still going, like the basil and oregano. We haven't had a freeze yet, so there's stuff still really going. Some of the things we can actually store in the ground, and it brings me to mind root vegetables. I mentioned that we're still picking some of those things. They're especially good now because as the weather becomes more and more cool, they begin to accumulate sugars, so they get sweeter and sweeter, things like beets and parsnips and carrots. And you can actually store these in the ground. If it starts to get even more cold and we have a little bit of frost, you might want to mulch them deeply and then pull them as you need them, but get the bigger ones out first. Leave them in the ground until the ground freezes up, then pull them all, store them indoors in a refrigerator. Or one way that I like to do it is in boxes of moist sand in a cool place in the basement. That works very well. They tend to try to grow there, but if it's cool, they don't really do much growing, and they do continue to accumulate sugars. Tomatoes, our vines are beginning to deteriorate. We've got a little bit of late blight going on, and after the dry weather, when we got the moisture, the stuff that was in process, the fruit that was beginning to develop, started to crack. A lot of it began to crack. And also, there are other things happening to tomatoes. Animals bite them. You know, it's crazy. They don't eat them. They bite them.
Yeah.
It's so annoying. You go out and you've got this beautiful tomato they're going to pick tomorrow because it'll be perfect. You go out and somebody got it. Maybe it was a raccoon or a squirrel or something. So actually, what we try to do now is we pick them as they turn pink. The vine can't do any more for them. Once they turn pink, bring them indoors and lay them out where you can keep track of them, sort them when you bring them in. Use the sound ones, or store the sound ones. Use the damaged ones up immediately. Now, if you have some that have cracked, if they've just cracked, you can cut that part off. If they've been too long since they cracked, they begin to get diseases, organisms that grow in them, and they will destroy the taste of the tomato anyway, so you just pitch those away. Peppers are still out there, but they're on their last legs, too, because they are warm-weather plants. You pick them as they get large enough. And, you know, green peppers, the big green peppers, all turn a color. They could turn red or orange or yellow or purple and so forth. But anyway, pick them as they get large enough to use, and use them up immediately if you can. Or those store very nicely if you dice them up, freeze them on a cookie sheet, quick freeze them, and then pour them into plastic bags so they're loose. Then anytime you need some green peppers, you've got them. Not peppers, but chopped peppers that you can put in chili and spaghetti and so forth. By the way, you need to protect the peppers and the tomatoes with blankets if we get a frost predicted. Most of us are going to be out of the plants or out of the business with peppers and tomatoes before we get much of a freeze anyway. Coles, the broccoli, the cabbage, cauliflower, collards, and so forth, these plants will stand a freeze, and you can store them in the garden. Again, they get sweeter as the temperatures drop, as the weather gets cooler. When you pick them, use them as soon as you can for the best quality, but you can store them indoors in the plastic bag in the refrigerator if you need to. And I wouldn't do that until the danger of frost comes or danger of a good hard freeze comes, and you need to get them out of the garden before they're destroyed. Winter squash are coming in now, and a lot of us try to grow some of these, even though we don't have much room. We grow a few acorn squash because we really like them.
We just like to do it. Yes.
Butternuts and Hubbards and even the pumpkins, they need to be harvested. These are winter squash, and they need to be harvested when they're fully mature. How do you tell? The skin will be tough. If you can't nick it with your thumbnail, they're ready. One thing I need to caution folks, if you're going to cut these things or pull these things, don't break the handles off because they'll deteriorate quickly if you do. Cut them with the shears. This is especially true with pumpkins. Pumpkins tend to be a little bit more soft, and also if you're going to use it as a jack-o'-lantern, you want the handle on it. Don't pick it up by the handle. Pick it up by the pumpkin, but the handle needs to be there anyway. Again, you want to use damaged ones immediately, and you can do this. If you've got an acorn squash that's been punctured or something like that, cut the bad part out, and you can still use it. Now, in order to harvest or to store these things, you need to store them in a warm place until they're hardened off. This is usually about 10 days at 75 degrees or so, if you've got a place where you can do that. Then store them where you get them at 50 degrees or so, and keep them that way. They will last all winter. It's amazing how long these last. In fact, we've had Hubbard squash that lasted until Hubbards were ready to harvest the next year. Herbs, you need to keep picking them as long as they keep growing, and use them right away or dry them. You can dry them in the basement or up in an attic someplace, and we've talked about this before. You need to store the leafy ones whole. Rub them as needed. These are the things that where you use them rubbed out. Don't rub them until you need them, because if you do rub them, the oils will begin to deteriorate. One other thing you can do, and we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, is pot up the best of your plants, bring them in for the winter, put them under lights, and keep picking them. Spots in the garden that are being vacated, you need to pull up the old plants. I like to chop them in place so you know that what you grew is in the same spot as you grew it. And when you do rotation with things like tomatoes, it's nice to know that that's where they were this past year, and none of them got out of that spot. Once you get them chopped up, turn in with a spading fork, and leave it rough for the winter. Or you can take this stuff and put it in a compost pile, or, as we do in some cases, dig out one of the beds in your garden and put all these old plants and leaves and stuff in that spot, because they add to the organic matter, which makes this heavy clay soil so much better to work, and the plants love it, and it's a lot easier to dig and so forth. That's a good thing to do with the organic matter that you've got. By the way, start a gardening journal if you haven't done so. I mentioned that you want to know where the tomatoes were. Make a map of your garden as it was this year and mark out all the things where they were. You can draw it out just on a piece of paper. Just make a line. Say, this bed was that, and so forth. List what was grown, where you got it, the seed source, when you planted it. You might note the weather that we've had this past year. It was interesting, to say the least. And then record the successes and failures so you don't make the same failures again.
Well, you don't have failures.
Oh, we all do, Orion.
Yes. Well, we have, what, two or three more visits before the season is over?
Yeah, I think about three, then we'll be done by the end of the month here, and then we'll turn it over to the winter.
All right, sir. Well, thanks for the update this week, and we'll talk to you a week from now.
Okay, Orion, look forward to it.
Jim Fazell, who knows everything about horticulture here on the Saturday Morning Show.
It is 23 minutes after 5 o'clock, 39 degrees on my thermometer in Huntley, Illinois at the moment. Last Wednesday, spent the day at World Dairy Expo in Madison, Wisconsin. Among the people we visited with, Ben Bransel, Secretary of Agriculture for the state of Wisconsin, where all summer long, weekly crop progress reports showed Wisconsin with the best quality, good to excellent corn and soybean crops of any state in the Midwest. My first question to Ben was, what did you do here in Wisconsin?
We just had a good look from the Lord on the state of Wisconsin, and things were just right. We got, every time it was a little bit stressed, we got the rain. We had appropriate temperatures. Things looked really good. But as you know, it's not in the bin.
I'm reminded of that often as I talked about the record production year. What is happening here at harvest time now?
Well, we were challenged a little bit with the weather conditions during silage. And, of course, silage is a big, big product for us in the state of Wisconsin for our dairy industry. We are number one in the U.S. for corn silage production. So that was a little bit challenging. But we got through that, and guys are starting to get into the field with the combines turning, and they're telling us it's going okay right now.
Let's talk about the economic climate for your dairy farmers in this state.
Pretty challenging. The symposium that we are hosting at the grounds with three prominent people that give a world picture, I want to let our industry know, whether it's the processing and the business climate or the farmers, what's going on in the world. And right now it is really challenging for the dairy farmer out there.
Are exports terribly important to dairy farmers in Wisconsin?
Yes, exports are one out of every 7 days of production are exported. That's a pretty large volume, and it's a real challenge when the marketplace is not there for you.
Is pizza a benefit to Wisconsin dairy farmers?
Pizza has made the difference. That's the way to market a lot of cheese. Without even talking about cheese, because that's the main ingredient on a pizza, and so it's been a huge benefit to the state of Wisconsin.
I will not get into politics, but with both candidates talking about trade in a negative way, how do Wisconsin farmers feel about their trade discussions?
Well, you know, I think they're a little bit frustrated overall on trade discussions as it's being talked about in the presidential campaign. But I think they have a great deal of faith that it'll all work out in the end, that Congress will insert itself at some point, and that the candidates, at least Trump, who hasn't had a lot of background experience, will be somebody that will be able to be educated on the value of trade. I think that trade in the long run is what makes this economy strong, because there's no way that the U.S. citizens can eat us out of a surplus.
You and I both attended the first World Dairy Expo for different reasons. I was here to cover it. What did you do at the first World Dairy Expo?
Well, I was a high schooler, and I liked showing calves through 4-H and FFA, and here was this new show in town, and so I came here with a friend from high school, and while I was here, they were holding an auction. And back then, that auction was to raise funds to help the expo exist financially. And I saw a calf on that auction and called home to my dad and said, I think I'd like to buy a calf, and I did.
And did it go on to the show ring?
No, it did go into our milk herd, and we had good production out of her. She left a lot of daughters for us, so it was a good experience for me, and it was a successful experience.
And how do you feel about the 50th anniversary?
Oh, 50 years in the making.
Yeah.
I absolutely am thrilled with the way this show has progressed. I think some of the people that really envisioned what this show was or should be would come back and just be in awe. I think there would be tears shed over what has happened to this show in the success that it has had and how it's brought together the world community. Little side story. We meet with trade delegations or people interested from other countries every day during the show. Yesterday, I spoke to an audience of Pakistan and Indian dairy farmers. And somebody said, I thought those two countries don't like each other. And I said, the cow's in the center and politics are out of the room, and they all have the same interest.
And then tell me about the cow that was unveiled here on the grounds for this event.
What a story. This cow is to commemorate the 50th year. There were a bunch of artists and photos of the breeds of dairy animals and some of the winners that have been on this grounds in the past. They brought all of those photos together into one cow. It was a real challenge to do that. So you see the attributes of every breed. And then they brought this mahogany granite in from South Dakota, over 40,000 pounds worth of it, and created a 6,900-pound statue of a cow that is a conglomeration of all the breeds. It took them 8 months of artwork and all of the efforts to create that cow.
Congratulations, young man, on your award from the University of Wisconsin.
Oh, well, thank you. I've always enjoyed agriculture. I love it. I've lived it. And when I had the opportunity under Governor Thompson to move to this job, I enjoyed it tremendously. When Governor Walker asked me to return, I thought it was a thrill of a lifetime that you get to try something again that you really like. It's gone well for me, and I really appreciate the recognition.
Ben Bransel, Secretary of Agriculture, State of Wisconsin, at World Dairy Expo. A little bit later in our program this morning, we'll talk to the general manager of the World Dairy Expo, Scott Bentley, to get his reaction on this very special year. We're at the 5:30 mark here on the Saturday morning show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN and WGNradio.com. And at 25 minutes before 6 o'clock, we still have to talk markets. And we'll visit with the general manager of World Dairy Expo in Madison in its final day today. And I'll talk a little bit about a special birthday party for a very special person a little bit later in the program. But right now we say welcome to Samuelson Says, sponsored by Wink Products Company, makers of quality specialty cleaning products since 1947. I'm Orion Samuelson, excited about being, well, fairly close to my battery recharging week of the year. If you're frustrated by slow drains, or if you find yourself standing in water when you take a shower, the cause could be hair and soap scum buildup. Well, you could speed up your drains and solve your problem with one of my favorite Wink products, Wink Hair Clog Blaster. Don't call the plumber. Just pick up Wink Hair Clog Blaster instead. Wink Hair Clog Blaster does the job for you. And be sure to check out all the products offered by visiting their website at wink.com. That's W-H-I-N-K.com. I am truly excited to be just days away from my battery recharging week of the year. Especially so because I wasn't able to participate last year. I was just 1 month out of open-heart surgery at convention time, and my doctor said no strenuous travel, no strenuous work. So For the fourth time since 1958, I missed the National FFA Convention last year. But I'll be back this year, and I'm really looking forward to rubbing shoulders with the leaders of the nation, the leaders of the world, and certainly the leaders of agriculture and food production, the members of the FFA. Now, the FFA has changed over the years. At one time, we had one star, the star farmer, but now we have four of them, and I have just completed recording the narration for the presentation at the FFA convention, and I can tell you they are outstanding in the work that they're doing. We now have the star of agri-science, the star of agribusiness, the star of agricultural placement, and, of course, the original, the star farmer of America. And what outstanding stories these 16 people have. But they're not alone. Nearly every member coming to Indianapolis for the FFA convention beginning on October 19th have an exceptional story to tell. Coming out of eighth grade, for example, and signing for a loan so they could start their own agricultural business. When I came out of eighth grade, I think I was able to pay $18 for a used bicycle, and that was about the extent. But today, oh, how different it is, and how you can't help but get your battery recharged at the FFA convention. That's why so many adults attend, corporate executives who support the FFA programs. And you've heard me say many times that the FFA and the 4-H are the best leadership training programs for young people anywhere in the world. And they will prove that at Indianapolis, and they will prove it to you as you watch how they conduct business at their convention. It's going to be an exciting time for me. My thoughts on Samuelson Says.
A presentation of Tribune Radio Networks at 20 minutes before 6, and Max and our market guest standing by, and we'll visit with those folks when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show. It is 17 minutes before 6 o'clock, and, well, throughout the year, Max and I do a lot of traveling around the country, getting a first-hand look at what's happening in the fields and in the livestock barns. And fall, of course, is no exception. So let's talk markets, and good morning, Max Armstrong.
Well, good morning, Orion. First this morning, I wanted to just say thanks, to take a moment to express appreciation to the folks in the community of Oregon, Illinois, the county seat of Ogle County, because last weekend, it was just a very pleasant experience once again at their Autumn On Parade, their festival that is held the first week of October every year. This was the 47th year for Autumn On Parade, and their theme was Celebrating the Heartland. And they have all of those craft booths in town around the courthouse square there. Oh, I want to thank the Ogle County Beef Association. I always go to visit those guys, and it's because I'm a moocher, okay? I'm looking for a free ribeye sandwich. Oh, they're so good. And I do buy it some years. I do pay them. I do slip around to the other side some years and give them some money because I really appreciate what they are doing, and it is a taste treat to enjoy their ribeye sandwich from the Beef Association. And special thanks to Stan Eden, because Stan once again invited me to come out with the Farm All. I had the Super M in town and participated in the parade and really enjoyed visiting with folks there. And thanks to Leona Nelson, Orion, because once again this year she shared her fudge, a special shipment for Orion and Max delivered in person when I was there in Oregon last week. Well, we had the chance to visit with Dale Dirkholz about the grain situation and about the harvest as it continues. Orion, your first question to Dale was about getting all of this crop harvested. We're certainly not there yet.
I'm being told that it's not a record crop till it's in the bin. Are we at the point now where we get concerned about getting it in the bin?
There may be a little bit, but I think more so down in the southeastern part of the U.S. than anywhere else. You look at the longer range forecast here for the Midwest, and it looks like we still got some warmer, drier weather ahead. So we got a rain event this week. Farmers get a much needed break, but I think the weather's still going to be pretty good for harvest in general.
And I would guess country elevators get a little bit of a break.
Oh, yeah, the whole pipeline gets a little bit of a break, and everybody certainly thanks everybody for that, too, because they need it every once in a while.
What would should we be concerned about in the southeast as far as crop losses with the hurricane?
That's really hard to tell at this juncture because, you know, we're really kind of second-guessing. But, you know, the latest maps I saw from the Hurricane Center here before today, it's going to really stay more to the coast. So I don't know that it's going to be really huge, but we are going to probably end up with some losses, but I don't think it's going to be tremendous.
And we always are concerned with the path of a hurricane that could stop systems coming across the Midwest.
Yeah, that's part of it. I think as much as anything right now with the hurricane down there, they're worried because one of the models has it going up the East Coast, making a big loop out in the Atlantic and heading west again and coming back in. And that's the one maybe to worry about if it would come back in after making a loop.
But really, the crop bulletin last week indicated we're just about on par with a normal harvest, right?
Yeah, harvest actually is going really well. You know, as much as anything, the Western Corn Belt's a little bit behind the Eastern Corn Belt, and that's because the maturity has been lagging a little bit this year, but they really are up to speed at this point. And again, you don't see any huge weather problems in the mix ahead other than the hurricane down in the southeast.
There's been the widespread assumption that that corn yield per acre number would be coming down to the September report, and yet private estimates that have been coming out, they haven't budged that number much.
You know, they really haven't, but, you know, when you start looking at the internal detail and understand the process the USDA goes through, you really see that, you know, there is room for this crop to come down, and it may be just a slow process into the final number in January.
Soybean yield, the expectation is that that number is going to climb, and boy, the anecdotal report coming out of the fields, I know you've got to be careful about following social media, tweets, Facebook, and everything, but my goodness, there have been some strong yield numbers.
You know, they have been, but you know what? A lot of people have forgotten 2 years ago out at DeKalb, there was a 30-acre field of beans that made 100 bushel to the acre, and everybody is remarking because they heard of one this year. When you talk to people on the phone, and as we're getting further into the soybean harvest, you're hearing quietly, I've got good beans, but they aren't any of this real splashy high yield. So the bean yield, yes, can go up. You know, there's been some talk national yield could be as high as 52 to 53, and that's possible, but I think it's kind of improbable because I use a pretty aggressive trend on the bean yield I work with, and that's an outlier to get over 52 bushels. So it may happen, but I don't think so.
We've noticed, we've seen a little bit of an uptick in exports. I mean, in wheat, for example, there's been some export interest in wheat. I guess the prices have gotten low enough.
The wheat business, the export business, really, we're running on pace and on trend to hit the USDA target. It's pretty good. The big thing I'm watching in the export sector is how the soybean business ramps up in terms of shipments, not sales. We've got plenty of sales on the books. We're second only to what we had 2 years ago. But if we're going to meet this record forecast the USDA has put in place, we really need to see shipments ramp up. And by the end of October, probably be shipping somewhere around 100 million a week. So I'd keep an eye on what happens with inspections. Also keep an eye on what happens with the Gulf basis level.
The dollar has provided a little bit of a headwind of late, has it not?
A little bit, but, you know, we're still in this broad range we've been in for a number of months, so I don't know that it's really a huge critical ingredient at this point. You know, when you look at the corn, when you look at the beans, the biggest factor in play at this point is the issues we had in South America last spring and the fact that they are rapidly winding down or have wound down export campaigns. So the world's got to come to the U.S. to pick up soybeans, definitely, and a portion of the corn needs, too.
They're really going to boost their corn plantings in Brazil, are they not?
Yeah, they're going to do that down there because prices internally in Brazil are favorable relative to soybeans themselves. Down in Argentina, it's because of the change in policies. And, yeah, we're going to have bigger corn crops in both places, weather providing.
Talking about the foreign market, you mentioned Argentina. Will that tax decision have an impact on our sales?
Well, I don't know it's going to have an impact on our sales, but it is having an impact on producer decisions down there because they have an early and a late season corn planting down there. And the fact that they're not going to reduce their bean export tax again really is one of these incentives. It's going to keep pushing acres away from beans into corn.
And then China, with its decision to maybe sell corn, what would that do to the world market?
Yeah, it's one of those everybody's trying to figure out, simply because right now it's still high-priced relative to the world market, so they're really not competitive. You kind of understand why they're wanting to move it, because I think they're worried about, you know, the longer they hold it, the more they lose quality, the more difficult and you know, of ever using any of these inventories that they have at this point. It hasn't seemed to have had an impact on the marketplace today, but it's one thing we're going to have to watch through the winter.
From the standpoint of our corn market there, DDGs are the big item now, are they not?
Yeah, they really are. You know, they've thrown a lot of taxes and incentives to keep DDGs from flowing into China. It's going to back them up here to the U.S., but in one sense, that's actually a positive to the meal sector, too, because we're taking away a protein source for them, so the meal demand ought to stay relatively robust, and because of that, beans.
Dale Durkholz with AgriVisor as he came to our studio this week, and a reminder to you that that October crop report is just ahead. It's coming up on Wednesday the 12th. Orion?
All right, Max. We'll keep an eye on that, as we do every month this time of the year when we get the monthly crop reports from USDA. A visit with the general manager of World Dairy Expo coming up when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show. Scott Bentley has served as general manager of World Dairy Expo for the past 4 years. But here we are, Scott, 50th anniversary. How special can that be for this show?
Well, it's certainly special for all of us. It's special for staff and for the board of directors, but we have a number of folks, Orion, as you can appreciate, that have been here for all 50 years. And for those individuals, this is certainly a milestone year.
I remember the first one. I was there, and there were a lot of questions, and maybe still questions 2 or 3 years later, but then it really caught on, and it has become a worldwide event.
You know, it did take a few years to catch on, and I think in large part, you know, the commitment from the early leadership, the passion, the dedication that they had really allowed this show to move forward. And then, quite frankly, the completion of the exhibition hall in 1994 and what allowed then for a dynamic and growing trade show really put World Dairy Expo on the map.
And we're standing alongside cows in a very comfortable building. I can remember the days of wind and rain and snow in the tents. What an improvement.
It really is. And I'm thrilled that my first year, 2013, we were still in the tents, still in the barns. And that allowed me to experience firsthand as general manager what it was like in those facilities. And now fast forward to 2016, state-of-the-art pavilions.
For the 50th anniversary, can you give me an approximate number of cows that are from how many states?
Absolutely. We have nearly 2,500 head of dairy cattle on grounds for the 7 breeds and the 8 major shows that are conducted this week. And they'll come from over 30 states across the United States as well as several provinces in Canada.
And then let's talk about the foreign visitors, because this truly is a world event.
It's a global event, and what makes World Dairy Expo a global event are the nearly 100 countries that are represented this week, over 3,000 registered international attendees. We have many friends from Mexico and Canada that no longer register because this is their home in the same way it is for you and I.
So, 50th anniversary, what are you doing?
Well, it's been a tremendous week, as you can appreciate, and we have had open houses throughout the week. We've had social events for our attendees. Of course, the open house hosted by World Dairy Expo on Wednesday evening was a tremendous gala and a wonderful evening. But we've really tried to enhance the attendee experience this week. We've got LED screens in the exhibition hall. We've got an outdoor LED screen in the outdoor trade mall. Giveaways and special touches to make it a memorable week.
Among the many changes, I remember when we used to take busloads out to dairy farms. Then came mad cow disease. What happened after that?
Well, then we implemented virtual farm tours, which have been a tremendous success, quite frankly. They're one of the special features of World Dairy Expo. And so instead of taking our attendees out to the farm, we bring the farms to our attendees. And they're educational, they're informative. It's a great chance for companies and dairy cattle exhibitors and, excuse me, dairy cattle producers to showcase their farms from across the United States and not just from here in Wisconsin.
Scott, thank you for a great golden anniversary, and now we look ahead to 2017.
We're already planning, and we're looking forward to it. Thank you for the opportunity.
Scott Bentley, General Manager of World Dairy Expo.
We're looking forward to being back for the closing ceremony tonight. At 5 o'clock, they begin the parade of breed champions in the dairy industry. One of those champions will be selected the Supreme Female Dairy Champion of the 50th anniversary World Dairy Expo. We'll be up there this evening to help MC that event. Look forward to seeing a lot of you there. Before leaving you this morning, I want to take just a moment to share with you the fact that yesterday afternoon, Gloria and I attended a surprise birthday party for the 95th birthday of Richard Duchossois, known to many of his friends, including us, as Mr. D. He is the man at Arlington Park Racecourse. We've known him quite a few years. Have always enjoyed his friendship and his company. And would you believe, yesterday afternoon, they managed to surprise him. There were probably 100 or more people on hand. He had no idea we had come into the grandstand at the Arlington Park Racecourse. And when he walked in, as he told us later, he was truly surprised. But a good friend and active in industry and in charity organizations, and certainly a promoter of an agricultural industry, horse racing. So happy birthday, 95th, Mr. D, still working about 6 days a week. And before leaving you, I'm remiss every week in not saying thank you to Bob Ferguson, who is the engineer who from long distance manages to make me sound a lot better than I am, and I do want to thank Bob for that this morning. And we're getting ready for the day of harvest and for the day at the World Dairy Expo. Max Armstrong and I, oh, yeah, speaking of that, Leona Nelson, Mother Nelson's chocolate fudge, thank you. We enjoyed that this week because Max did bring some of it back to us. Thank you for joining us here on Chicago's very own WGN Chicago, WGNRadio.com, where it's now 6 o'clock.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.